Canto 1, Chapter 19. The Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. Sutta said, the king felt that what he had done was something abominable, and thought most depressed, alas, it was uncivilized and evil what I did to the faultless, grave and powerful Brahmin. Because of the contempt of what I did against that godly person, I undoubtedly, very soon, will meet with a very troublesome calamity. I certainly hope that that will happen, so that I will be relieved of my sins and never do anything like that again. May I, on this very day, burn with my kingdom, strength and wealth of riches in the fire ignited by the Brahmin community, so that the inauspiciousness of sinful thinking against the Lord, the twice-born souls and the cows, may never happen to me again. Thus pondering, the message reached him of the curse of death pronounced by the sage's son. That curse, in the form of the fire of a snake bird, he accepted as auspicious, because that impending happening would be the consequence of his indifference about worldly affairs. He decided to forsake this world as also the next, for he already had concluded that both worlds were inferior compared to a life of service at the feet of Krishna he considered the greatest achievement. So he sat down at the bank of the transcendental river, the Ganges, in order to fast. That river, always flowing mixed with tulsi leaves, consists of the auspicious water carrying the dust from the feet of Lord Krishna that sanctifies both the worlds inside and outside, and even the Lord of Destruction, Lord Shiva. Which person destined to die would not turn to that river? In a spirit not deviating from the vows of the sages, he would free himself from all kinds of material attachments. With that decision, he, the worthy descendant of the Pandavas, sitting down at the river which flows from the feet of Vishnu, surrendered himself to the mercy of Mukunda till he died. All the great minds and thinkers who, together with their pupils, are capable of purifying the entire world, then came to gather there on the plea of making a pilgrimage. It is because of their personal presence that the holy places enjoy their status of sanctity. Atri, Chavana, Sharadvan, Arishtanemi, Bhrigu, Vasishtha, Parashara, Vishwamitra, Angira, Parashurama, Uthatya, Indrapramada, Itmavau, Medhatiti, Devala, Arshtishena, Bharadvaja, Gautama, Pipalada, Maitreya, Auruva, Kavasha, Kumbayoni, Dvaipayana, and the great personality Narada arrived. Also many other divine personalities, saintly Brahmins, the best saintly advisers of the most prominent nobles, and many other sages like Aruna appeared to the occasion. All the heads of the dynasties of sages assembling there were respectfully welcomed by the emperor, bowing his head. After they all sat comfortably, he, again having offered them his obeisances, thereupon humbly spoke about his decision to fast, with folded hands standing before them as someone whose mind is detached from worldly affairs. The king said, we are truly grateful to be the most fortunate of all the kings trained to receive the favors granted by the greatest of souls, for at the feet of the Brahmins the royal orders are but refuge to be kept at a distance because of their reprehensible actions. Because of my sins, the controller of the transcendental and mundane worlds in the form of that Brahmin's curse very soon will be the cause of my detachment from them. I, who always thinking of family matters, was affected by fear. Therefore, O Brahmins, just accept me as someone who with the Lord in his heart has taken shelter of the Ganges, the Divine Mother. Let this snake bird, or whatever magical thing the twice-born soul called for, bite me forthwith. And you, please continue with the stories about Vishnu. And again, let it be so that, wherever that I, in relation to the supreme unlimited Lord and the association he attracts in the material world, may take birth, I will find friendly relations everywhere with obeisances unto the twice-born souls. And thus it came to pass that the king, having arrived at that resolve, fully self-controlled, seated himself on kusha grass laid to the east, while facing the north from the southern bank of the wife of the sea, the Ganges. The charge of his administration he had handed over to his son. To that occasion, the gods, who from the sky had seen that the king would fast until his end, all in praise scattered the earth with flowers, continually beating celestial drums in pleasure. All the great sages who had assembled there praised him for the wisdom he had thus shown. In approval, they, from the power of their goodness for the living beings, a quality of heart equal to the character of him praised in the scriptures, thereupon said, "It is not astonishing at all that you, O saintly king, O chief of all of us, who strictly follow Krishna, being seated on the throne that is decorated with the helmets of kings, as immediate like this gave up your life in your desire to achieve association with the Fortunate One. We will all stay at this place for as long as it takes this foremost devotee to give up his body and return to the world of the Supreme One, where he will be completely free from worldly concerns and lamentation." After having heard the assembled sages speak thus impartially, sweet to hear, grave and perfectly true, Parikshit complimented them all with their appropriate show of respect, and said, desirous to hear about the activities of Vishnu, "You, from all directions, have assembled here as embodiments of the Vedic knowledge maintained above the three worlds, with no other intention in this world or a world hereafter, but to act for the good of others according to your innate nature. Therefore, I beg you, trustworthy Vedic man of learning, to tell me which of all the different duties for each person, and especially for those who are about to die, you consider to be the proper one for me." At that moment, the powerful son of Vyasa, Shukadeva Goswami, appeared. Dressed like a mendicant, he, satisfied in self-realization, freely travelled around the earth surrounded by children and without distinguishing marks of identity or any concern about material comforts. 16 years of age, he had a body with delicate legs, hands, thighs, arms, shoulders and forehead. His eyes were beautifully wide in a face with a high nose, similar ears, nice eyebrows and a neck as shapely as a conch shell. With a fleshy collarbone, a broad chest, and a deep navel, he had nice folds in his abdomen. Stark naked, with curly, scattered hair and long arms, he had a hue of the best among the gods. Even though he covered his nakedness, the sages, who had a keen eye for physiognomy, recognized the symptoms of the blackish skin, the eternal beauty of his tender age, and the attraction for the fair sex with his beautiful smiles. And so they all stood up from their seats. To welcome the new guest, he who is always protected by Vishnu, Parikshit, bowed before him to offer his obeisances, whereupon his less educated following of boys and women immediately withdrew as he took his exalted seat in regard of the respect shown. Surrounded there by the greatest of the great saints among the Brahmins, the kings and the godly souls, Shukadeva shone as the greatest lord, as resplendent as the moon surrounded by the planets, heavenly bodies and stars. Calm, intelligent and self-assured sitting down, the sage was approached by the great devotee, the king, who, properly bowing down with folded hands, asked him questions in a polite and friendly manner. Parikshit said, "O Brahmin, what a blessing it is for us Kshatriya friends, by the mercy of you being our guest, to have been chosen today as a servant of the devotee, by the visit of your good self to be allowed to find our way. Thinking of your person, immediately, all the places we inhabit are purified, not even mentioning what it means to see you, touch you, wash your feet, and offer you a seat. By your presence, O great mystic, a person's gravest sins are immediately vanquished, like what happens to non-believers in the presence of Vishnu. Finally, Krishna, the Supreme Lord so dear to the sons of Pandu, is satisfied with me, and has, from his affection for his cousins, by your visit accepted me, their descendant, as one of theirs. How else could it be possible that you, out of your own, especially for someone in his last hours before death, have appeared here to meet us, while you normally, all perfect as you are, move unseen among the common people? Therefore, I beg you, as the supreme spiritual master of all ascetics, what for a person in this life would be the path of perfection, and especially what that would mean for someone about to die. Please explain what a person should attend to and meditate on, O Master, what he should do, what he should think of, and should serve, as also what would be against the principle. This I ask you because, O Supreme Devotee, one at the homes of the householders rarely sees you staying longer than the exact time of milking a cow. Sutta said, thus pleasantly, being addressed and questioned by the king, the supreme son of Vyasadeva, so well versed in the knowledge of one's actual duty, began his reply. Thus, the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam ends, named Creation.